It's Don, I'm in the studio.
Okay, hold on one sec. Here he comes. Dan Glickman, you are connected to Don.
Okay, hi, this is Dan.
How are you doing this morning?
Very good, very fine. And you're okay, I presume?
I'm doing great. I ordered your book the other day, so I'm looking forward to getting that.
Okay, great. Great. Well, nice talking to you. So I'm just ready whenever you are.
Great.
Where are you now? I know with the Farm Network, but where physically are you located?
Grand Forks, North Dakota. We cover Minnesota, okay. North Dakota, and South Dakota.
So. Okay. All right. Okay, good. Well, I went up there years ago with Byron Dorgan and Ken Conrad and a few other people.
Yeah. Pomeroy, I'm guessing.
And Pomeroy, too. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you were secretary. Pomeroy was president of the National Farm Broadcasters. So
okay. Yeah, now I remember you. Actually, Pomeroy's in my book. He, during one of the times that somebody threw things at me, he protected me. So, you know.
It's good to see you. Well, let me get the tape running. We can visit a bit.
Okay, sure.
All right. And let's talk. First of all,
it's a tough question. Some areas are still pretty bipartisan. I would say agriculture policy remains one of the more bipartisan areas. But you know, it's like we have a very tribal atmosphere now. If you're a Republican, you often won't talk to the Democrats. The Democrat says the sky is blue, the Republicans say the sky is green, and vice versa. And I think a lot of that is caused by the 24-hour social media. A lot of it's caused by the amount of money in politics. A lot of it is caused by just way too much adherence to political party. And we really need more independent people. I'm a Democrat and proud of it, but I was never reluctant to make arrangements and deals with people on the other side of the aisle. That's become much more infrequent.
When you were in Congress, you went through four farm bills, if I recall correctly, and one during your time as secretary.
Right, right, five farm bills.
So today we've got ag committees that really many of them don't have a traditional ag background. We've got a much more urbanized legislative body. What's that mean for future farm bills?
Well, actually, I think it's healthy that the ag committee has more urban and suburban members on it. It was, you know, 100% rural, and, you know, that's fine as long as there was the power to get legislative stuff through. But you know, there are only maybe 50 or so congressional districts that are substantially rural. So you do need to build coalitions with urban members of Congress, particularly as you deal not only with farm programs, but also with food stamps, school meals, anti-hunger programs. So that collaborative across the board deal-making is requires you to have a broader mix on the agriculture committees. And the Senate is a little easier because every senator has urban and rural interests both in their states. But in the House, traditionally it had been almost all farm and rural members. You couldn't get any urban members to even want to serve on the agriculture committee. And I think that is changing.
During your time at USDA, there was a proposal to change the name of the department to the Department of Food and Agriculture. It didn't get very far at that time. Do you think the environment's different today?
Well, I always thought the department, the best name of the department is what the Senate Agriculture Committee is called. It's called the Department of Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry, or the Department of Food and Agriculture, reflecting what it does more than anything else. You know, about 40% of the employees in the Department of Agriculture are in the U.S. Forest Service. And so, you know, I think it also would help build the image of the department to be a stronger force in the federal government, especially with the urbanization in America. And so I still think it's a good idea. I proposed it. I remember one member of Congress said, oh, it would be too expensive to change the stationery. I thought that was a pretty bleak excuse, but nothing has happened. I mean, they have bigger fish to fry than that, but I still think it'd be an important thing to do.
What do you see as some of the chief farm policy issues that we're dealing with today?
Well, I think that after COVID and we've been through the supply chain issues, and you saw this cybersecurity problem, making sure that agriculture is, especially agribusiness, has the most modern up-to-date protections against, interfering with the grid, the electric grid, interfering with the supply chain, so we don't have a lot of problems like what afflicted JBS. That's a huge problem because, you know, if we were to have our electric grid or internet or connectivity to communications struck, it would kill agriculture. It'd just be a terrible thing. So that's a big problem. Second issue, of course, is China and trade issues. You know, we love to sell our products to the Chinese, but they often don't play the trade game very fairly, and we have to figure out how to calibrate it. China's not our enemy. They're our competitor, but we certainly need them to buy our farm products. And, of course, climate and sustainability. And a lot of progress is being made on the farm and in agriculture by farmers and others to deal with the issue of climate. And I think agriculture is sometimes targeted for being a bigger part of the problem than it really is. But it's still, the fact of the matter is, newer and younger farmers are recognizing the importance of sustainable agriculture techniques. It's got to be part of the future.
You mentioned trade. During your time as secretary, biotechnology was a big deal. Discrimination issues came to the forefront. Crop disasters. It seems like a lot of these issues come back time and time again.
Yeah, you know, I watch what Secretary Vilsack is dealing with, and of course he has a lot of experience having served as secretary for almost 8 years in the Obama administration, and now the challenges that he's facing. But the department and the agriculture community generally are facing a lot of the same problems. Access to foreign markets is big. Technology. The one thing that has changed a little bit is that innovation and technology is becoming a much bigger part of agriculture, and farmers and people are using more modern tools, precision agriculture, using trying to use the crop inputs more sustainably. But the problems are still there. We have one of the biggest problems in all of agriculture is availability and access to water. We see water tables falling all over the country, and that means we need to use technology to develop more water-resistant crops that don't take as much water, and that requires an ample research budget. And that's one of the things that I think Congress is going to have to really wrestle with, is how to get more money into agriculture research.
And you're part of a pretty small group of men and women that have worked on that second floor at USDA. I'm guessing you have a relationship with some of the other folks that have also served in that role.
Well, the old, I say this literally and figuratively, but the old agriculture secretaries still get together, and I have a good relationship with Tom Vilsack. I think he is a fine man, a good public servant, a good listener, and thoughtful, and so I think we're lucky to have him as secretary right now, and I think he has the confidence of the president. And we live in a crazy world where facts sometimes get swallowed up by emotion, and that happens in agriculture as well as every other place. And so I think having a calming force as secretary is really healthy, and I think we are fortunate to have that now.
From our region, Bob Berglund and Ed Schaefer both served as Ag Secretary. Do you have a connection?
I've seen, of course, Bob had passed away, but and he was a mentor because I was a freshman congressman when he was secretary. So, he was such a wonderful man, and he had to live through the farm crisis of the late 70s. And I'm sure that wasn't easy, but I think he knew that it wasn't personal to him, and he was well-liked. And Ed and I have traveled together. We went to China together, and I've been on several panels with him. So, again, it speaks to the bipartisan nature of agriculture. But it's important to have an ag secretary that is not only has a seat at the table at the highest levels of government, but that people will listen to as others outside of agriculture will listen to. The problem has always been that fewer and fewer people are engaged in farming, and rural areas have such a smaller part of the population. So we have the United States Senate, which gives every state 2 senators, and doesn't matter what the size of the state. So North Dakota and South Dakota certainly have as much influence as New York and California, and I think that's pretty good, actually. The founding fathers figured that one out pretty well. But I think that this rural-urban divide is overstated a bit. I think that more and more, I think we're finding how we all need each other in this country, regardless of where we're from.
Good point. We're talking, obviously, you got a new book out, Laughing at Myself, My Education in Congress, on the Farm and at the Movies. What are folks going to find in your book?
Well, you know, I mean, they're going to find a lot of experiences, how I was the most assaulted member of the cabinet probably in history. You people threw GMO seeds at me, infected buffalo guts at me, tofu cream pies at me. In fact, former Congressman Earl Pomeroy saved me once when somebody with, I think, some emotional problems broke into the Agriculture Committee and smashed a big glass bottle. So they're going to find, you know, that's one of a series of humorous stories that happened to me. I found that people really care a lot about food, sometimes to the expense of my personal safety. But I think my big point in the book is the role of self-deprecating humor in politics. That I call the book Laughing at Myself, how important it is for politicians and everybody else to be able to laugh at themselves and to be able to make a joke out of situations. And we kind of have in some respects, a humorless society today, particularly in Washington, where people do take themselves too seriously, and sometimes leaders use humor in a negative way, a little bit like I think our last president did. And so the book is really a demonstration that a sense of humor is necessary to as part of the art of leadership, and I give personal examples of all of that.
Must be a Kansas trait. I think of Bob Dole and Pat Roberts.
I learned a lot from both of them, actually. They used to call us the Troika, because I actually think that Dole and Roberts were funnier, but still, I think the three of us tried to have an authentic sense of humor. And if you look around today, there are not a lot of politicians that smile very much and then give off this kind of sense that things can be funny. Things don't have to be all that serious all the time.